This podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to their elders past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge their ongoing connections to land, waters, and culture. Genocide and colonization are ongoing processes that continue to this day. Sovereignty was never ceded. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Auspol Snack Pod, a lefty podcast where we bring you Australian news and politics and also lots of memes. We're the official podcast of the Auspol Shitposting Facebook group, which you can check out on Facebook, search Auspol Shitposting. My name is Noon. On Facebook, I'm Ino Funkenstein. I'm the admin creator of Auspol Shitposting, and with me is my co-host.
Hey, Zach the Snack. How's it going?
Yeah, good. How are you, Zach? You're looking
a little peaky.
Yeah, your eyes are a little...
I'm extremely hungover.
Cool.
Yeah.
So can we assume you're going to be...
full of sparkling wit and conversation.
I'm going to use exactly the phrase sparkling wit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like accurate, informative facts.
Yes, definitely. I feel like we're sparkling already.
It's true. Just before we start, kind of wanted to mention we've had kind of a big week in the group. I did a couple of like important mod posts, which were mostly boring and shitty. One was about people being mean and the other one was about boring communism discourse, which, to be clear, I'm into interesting communism discourse, but the boring stuff is boring. Yeah. So, mostly got good responses
to fight people to the death based on which dead Russian guy that they think was the coolest.
Yeah. Nah, yeah, mostly because I'd lose, physically, you know, obviously the dead Russian guy I like the most is the best, so I would never lose that aspect of it, but the physical fighting.
Sorry, this podcast is over. Go on. Yeah.
No, that's all. There was another one. I was like, hey, everyone stop being dicks to each other. It's not very nice. It's not the kind of space I want to make, and mostly got really good responses, but a couple of people messaged me being like, hey, you're right. Your group fucking sucks. Everyone's a dickhead. And I was like, come on, guys. Like, I just literally was trying to manage.
Trying to make
Why
it better.
Is now the time that you decided... Anyway.
Well, look, I enjoy the group.
Thanks.
And I enjoy your efforts to keep it, a pleasant place to be.
Mm.
And I'm sure that everybody else is happy to do their part as well.
Mm.
Yeah. Do you want to get into our entree?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, so what are we having?
We're having a little sports rort.
Delicious.
Follow-up.
Yeah.
A little, like a, what do you call a
leftovers.
Small... Yeah, leftovers. Thank
Having
you.
Leftovers. That's great.
So, off to a fucking flying start. Okay, so...
The one thing missing from this show is more food puns.
Yeah,
so, I mean, definitely. Leftovers, that's actually pretty good, though. Yeah.
That's not bad. That could,
Follow-ups.
That could be a segment.
Mm.
But
this week is an entree.
Yeah, it's on leftovers entree. So, this story, we covered it... 2 episodes ago, and it's been developing in the fortnight since then. It's been a couple of new things. One fun detail was that a rifle club that Bridget McKenzie, the sports minister, or the former sports minister, current agriculture minister...
who was the one who did all of these rorts, managing it.
Gave out all of these sports grants to basically pork barrel electorates that, a lot of them are marginal.
Mm.
One of the organizations that got money was a gun club that she is a lifetime member of.
She was given a free lifetime membership of it, actually, like 2 weeks before this grant was awarded. And
which makes it so much less suspicious.
Oh, yeah, totally. And she's been like, people are like, oh, she didn't disclose it on the register. And like, technically it's below the threshold for how much you have to register. But people have been talking about how like, back in the day, I think it was maybe under Keating, someone got given a teddy bear by a foreign dignitary and didn't disclose it, and I'm pretty sure they resigned over that, like, teddy bear gate or whatever. But this, like, $250 lifetime membership that then led to a corrupt funding allocation is, like, heaps cool.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gee, the state of politics today, Noon, I tells you. It's not like it
day,
is under Keating. Things are great.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Heavy sarcasm. some other interesting developments is that we now have confirmed that Scott Morrison's office was involved in these rorts.
Yes, but not Scott himself, right?
That is not yet confirmed, though. I mean, like...
Well, you know, his employees are running around. They can't tell him every single thing that they do.
The people who he work with on a day-to-day basis, who he sees all the time and whose job it is to literally inform him about
them,
everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he didn't know anything about that. Yeah.
Well, we'll wait and see.
And it's... Yeah, it's funny because, like, the whole issue, or one of the, like, really suspicious things about this grant scheme was that it was decided on the basis of which electorate the club or whatever was in.
As opposed to the system set up by Sports Australia, which is that you make an application, they rate your application out of 100 based on how much you need the money.
And how useful it's going to be and how
whether
much
or not you'll actually
to
be able to build
done,
the thing.
Whatever. Yeah.
But instead, the, like, the minister's department and now apparently the prime minister's office were referring to electorates opposed to clubs.
And Scott Morris, the PM's office, sent over a letter being like, hey, we think it would be really cool if you, like, double-checked the figures and included these three electorates, which, like, shows that they knew exactly what the grants were, which was a pork barreling exercise. And they were like, cool, pork barrel these ones, please.
Yep. So that's interesting. I think there's, I mean, there's a lot of pressure on McKenzie to resign over this, you know, at least public pressure. I don't know how many people from within the party have been talking about
it. Right.
But, I mean, you were explaining that basically there's sort of two possible courses of action here. Either she resigns, falls on her sword, is martyred, becomes a Liberal hero, and basically absorbs all of the blame for this.
Gets some cushy ambassadorial role or whatever. Joe Hockey's just coming back. Maybe she could do that one. Or something along those lines.
And the whole, like, the play from Morrison up until this point has been to try and distance himself from her as much as possible.
Also without saying that she did anything wrong.
Yeah, so it's a fine line that he's been walking. But basically, you know, everybody's like, oh, no, it was basically her office. No one else knew anything about it. And so that, you know, basically they can get her to
isolate
resign.
The
and she
contamination,
can,
whatever. Yeah.
But it looks like that she's not going to do that. And she said, I think publicly and privately, that she's not going to resign.
Totally, yeah. So, so what I was saying to you before the show was, like, either Scott Morrison can, like, back her, because if she resigns, then it might spill over further, or he can try and strong arm her to resigning and taking all the fall for it. And it looks like she's not willing to do that. So if he does want her out, he's going to have to, like, pry her out with a crowbar. Which,
where's her team spirit? For the former sports minister, she definitely doesn't have the...
And she's a national, isn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he actually doesn't have the power to make her resign directly. Mm. So he can only pressure her and the National Party to get rid of her. He can't directly get rid of her. As far as we know, this is actually an interesting, and we've already gone way too long over this story, but the Nationals and Liberals coalition agreement is secret, right? So the deal between those two parties about how they share power, how they share ministries, how they make decisions or whatever is secret to the public. So we don't actually know if Scott has the power to get rid of the ministers in his cabinet or not.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, that will keep developing. It looks like it's becoming a real big deal. So, I mean, it already is,
it's spilling out. People haven't forgotten about it.
Yeah, and pressure on McKenzie is mounting also, just before we get off this topic, because there's something very similar has happened with drought relief funding that was allocated while she was agriculture minister.
No, it was while she was the Minister for Regional Services, which may have been the same time, but that was the role that she had when she allocated it.
Right. Regional it was an election promise made under David Littleproud when he was the ag minister before the election.
Yep.
And then, so basically there was this drought relief funding for communities. And basically before the election, then they made the promise that if they won, that they would give 14 more councils, local government areas,
access to that fund, or included in that, like, drought requirement or
and
whatever.
13 of them were in coalition seats.
Yeah, and the other one was in Mayo, which is the seat held by Rebecca Sharkey, which has been a Liberal stronghold for forever, that Georgina Downer failed to win and that they're really hoping to get back at some point. Yeah.
Yeah. But that money was eventually distributed under Bridget McKenzie. And so now it looks like they've just...
The other thing is, there's a very similar thing. You know, you were saying before about the, like, rating out of 100 for the sports grants or whatever. There's a similar thing. So with the local councils, they have to be, I think it's 17% of workers in that local council have to be working in agriculture. And then they're eligible for this, like, drought-affected region funding. And 6 of the 14 seats were, like, significantly under that 17 mark. There were, like, 9% ones. And
It's alarmingly similar to
the way that they did the sports grant
stuff. Yeah. Yeah, so, but
it's clearly her MO.
Well, I don't think it's just her MO. I think this is the MO of this government. I mean, as we've
seen in the previous sports rules, also Labour.
Like, yes, it's absolutely. Both of the major parties do this when they're in power. But it's this attitude of like when money comes in, like the political expediency takes precedence over any other criteria for spending public money.
Yeah.
The system is broken, you guys. It's bad.
Mm-hmm. We should argue about which old Russian guys we like. That's the way to fix it.
Yeah, I can't wait to build a unified left around that, whoever wins that argument. Uh-huh. Yeah, cool. This is turning into a bit of a fun one, so...
More leftovers next week, possibly.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that one. So let's move on to our First Nation story then.
Yeah. So this is also kind of a leftovers, but it's really, blown up. So we mentioned before the whole Bruce Pascoe, Andrew Bolt bullshit, where Bolt has been like basically lying about, Pascoe's work and then also, claiming that he's not Indigenous. And there's been a bunch of bullshit about that going on. But
so racist.
Yeah,
he's so racist.
He's a
convicted racist.
But he's still doing it.
This is not surprising, but it's still very upsetting.
Yeah, and he's got a new exciting like right hand lady to help him be a giant asshole, and that's Josephine Cashman, who's a Warramé woman. She's an Indigenous woman who was a member of the.
Senior advisory committee for
to the Prime Minister's office for the co-design of the Indigenous Voice to Parliament, which is a very long title. But anyway, she was in this committee to like design a way that First Nations people will get to have a voice to Parliament, which is the whole Statement from the Heart Uluru thing. And she provided Andrew Bolt with a letter, which was. Apparently written by Terry Yumbalul, who is a Yolngu elder and the tribal chief of the Warramé people. So that's in Yolngu, which is up in Arnhem Land.
Warramiri,
sorry, thank you. This letter, apparently from Terry Yumbalul, basically is like, yeah, fuck Bruce Pascoe, he doesn't know shit, none of our dream stories say anything about the stuff that he's talking about.
There's no way that my people could have... built wells, I think is one of the lines. Yeah.
And it also in this letter says that Josephine Cashman has been through a initiation ceremony for Yolngu people, spelt wrong repeatedly, and that the land chose her to become a leader of the Yolngu people. Again, that's not a real thing.
Sure. So this all sounds like it checks out. It's the end of that story?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Bruce Pascoe wrecked.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. We've got some breaking news. I can't believe we've never done that joke before.
It's true. do you want to take it through this breaking news content?
Not really, but I'll give it a shot. Go on. Yeah. Jump in where I inevitably get something wrong. But turns out, surprise, the letter is... fake.
Complete
bullshit on a couple of levels.
Yes.
So, Terry Yumbalul has said that he never wrote the letter.
Yep.
So, the guy that they claim it's from says that he didn't write it.
He never wrote any letter. He didn't even write anything vaguely.
He didn't send her an email.
Yeah.
And then she did a bit of editing. He says that he spoke to Cashman on the phone.
Yep.
Briefly. And that's it.
He also says that, like, he didn't say nearly any of the things that she presumably wrote this letter. Like, I think we can say that she wrote this letter.
Were you trying to get defamationed?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, cool. No, I'll stick with you.
Truth defense, my dude.
Well, it might not even be that strong of a court case, because aside from the fact that he says that he didn't write it, large chunks of it are fucking plagiarized from an old article elsewhere online.
About Yolngu history and dreaming stories and so on, yeah.
So she's written this bullshit letter where being like, yeah, this guy totally agrees with everything that I said about how this other guy isn't Indigenous. And also that I have been given a special position of authority. Except that she's describing like a process that doesn't exist,
right? And so it's totally worth it, listeners, to look up Terry Yumbalul's comments on this. But he basically said, one, the land doesn't choose people for leadership; it's birthright that does that. Two, Cashman would never have been eligible for that birthright because she's not a Yolngu woman. 3, there were major spelling errors like Yolngu in that letter that he would never have made. 4, the ceremony that she was talking about doesn't exist for women. So, like,
there's so much wrong with it. And also, 5, he says that he doesn't know Bruce Pascoe or his work.
And he's never read the book. He doesn't know what the claims are. He doesn't say anything about it. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, this is look, it's kind of upsetting. I can, you know, we can agree that, like, Cashman seems to be a liar. And, like, disingenuous. And the whole idea around, like, even before she started doing all this fake stuff to back herself up and back Andrew Bolt up, the whole notion of, like, questioning Indigenous identity is, like, so problematic to begin with. And it was, I think, the Minister for Indigenous Affairs, Ken Wyatt, who said, like, it's kind of weird to me that it's only Indigenous people who ever get subjected to these, like, purity tests when it comes to claiming their identity.
I don't want to get into US poll because you'll clock me, but there's this whole, like, Warren situation going around. And I suggest listeners listen to The Worst Year Ever. There was a recent episode about Warren and Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, but about the whole, like, Cherokee heritage stuff. Yeah, but it's, as you say, only Indigenous people across the world who get subject to that kind of thing.
Yeah, the whole thing is, like, racist from the get-go. But basically, you know, she's been brought in by Andrew Bolt to prop up his sort of, like, one-man culture war. Like, he hates Bruce Pascoe. He's got it in for Bruce Pascoe because he's a fucking convicted racist, as we know.
Yeah.
But he's sort of brought in Cashman, and we don't know, like, what he told her to do, but she has now forged this letter and been let go from the Senior Advisory Council for The Voice. And Bolt has basically washed his hands of it and been like, she wrote the letter, I had nothing to do with it. And so she's now had to kind of fall on her sword. She had this, like, brief moment in the spotlight for 2 weeks where she sided with a racist, and now she's been kind of chewed up and spat out. So
this is maybe a deep cut from when we were, like, 15, but there's that Jim Carrey song, Imposter, and there's a line, you need a black man
to... No one's
going to
get this reference.
I know, but it's... you need a black man.
I rap on my track to the best of my ability, you need a black man to give your songs some credibility.
Exactly, which is just the Bolt-Cashman relationship summed up perfectly. Yeah,
It is a great, great video.
It is, yeah. Cool, all right.
I think we've done a messy but
thorough job there. Okay.
We should not have to be talking about this.
Yeah, sucks for Bruce Pascoe especially. Just like...
ridiculous, like, to have people debating your identity in public like this is, you know, like, Andrew Bolt has huge reach. Basically, no one else is concerned about this, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
There's a couple of fringe racists that he seems to be getting his some pointers from, but otherwise...
Real staunch defenders of Indigenous culture and whatever.
It's real stupid shit. Anyway, fuck Andrew Bolt.
Uh-huh, fuck Josephine Cashman.
Moving on.
Big ups Bruce Pascoe.
Yeah,
let's move on.
Quality work. So now it's time for a potluck.
Potluck, where you bring the snacks.
We have a potluck from an anonymous listener. A potluck is our segment where we invite listeners to send in 1 minute of audio talking or ranting about a political thing, any kind of audio,
or
a meme thing,
an Australian thing.
Yeah, if you want to send something into the show, please do. Email us at auspolsnackpod@gmail.com. So here's one from our anonymous listener.
So I've been reading about the religious discrimination bill, or the religious freedom bill, or whatever the fuck it's called, and it's it actually gets worse the more that you know about it. And I haven't even finished it. So it's like, but what I have read is that essentially it's making it possible for, like, you know, the bakers to be like, no, we're not going to make you a cake. But it's illegal for us to be like, that's fucked. It's messed up. And then when you talk about, like, gender dysphoria from a DSM-5 perspective, we know it's caused by social and systemic factors, like what, you know, like this bill. And then you consider the high suicide rate in the LGBTQIA+ community, and you can, like, only assume, like, what's going to happen. Like, we know what's going to happen. And it just makes me wonder, is this manslaughter?
Oof. Yep.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, it's true, though. Like, that's the issue. Like, this whole religious freedom shit gets framed as, in that way, as religious freedom, but actually the effect is, like, destroying the, like, safety and community integration and mental health and access to services that queer people have.
Yeah, it's not quite as catchy a name for a bill, though, is it?
I mean, probably all the same people will support it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, probably more.
Yeah.
When you're explicit about it like that. Yeah, look, but it's obviously fucking awful that this is in any way a priority for the people who decide
our
what
fucking country.
Laws we have here. But I think the anonymous listener, thank you, anonymous
Thanks.
Listener, raises an interesting question there as well about the, like, culpability of the individuals who are part of the state who implement these destructive laws that ultimately end in queer people
dying.
Taking, absolutely. So, I mean, this is what we mean when we talk about state violence. It's not just being
shot by police or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
It's policies that are specifically designed to undermine your well-being and, you know, make it much easier for you to die. It's awful. But yeah, so I mean, I don't know what the timeline is on that bill, but I'm sure that we'll cover it in more detail as it goes on. Because honestly, I'm a little bit out of the loop with it myself. I know that it came up in the wake of the Israel Folau stuff.
Yeah,
which,
and
like,
so
it was literally spurred into existence by somebody getting fired for saying homophobic shit. Like, there's no way that this bill was ever going to be anything other than a direct attack on the queer community. So,
yeah, the white Sharia bill, as I like to think of it. I know that's problematic, so, you know, feel free to flame us in Twitter, but yeah, wait. Yep.
Okay. Thanks, Noon. Now it's time for our main course. What do we have in this week, Noon?
It's Aunt's Biscuits.
Oh, damn, did you think up that joke all by yourself?
Yeah, like the fifth time I came up with it myself. Yeah, yeah.
explain the joke now.
Okay, so Bettina Aunt just received an Order of Australia. She is a fake psychologist who basically advocates for men's rights, is an anti-feminist. Sorry, I'm saying men's rights in the assumption that everyone listening knows what I mean is, like, violent misogyny and anti-feminism, right? Not actual rights for men, no. just the...
Less rights for women, which is, when you think about it, that's the same thing, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Because men and women are locked in an eternal combat.
It's a zero-sum game where one of the only two sexes/genders, which is the same thing.
Yep.
Yeah. If one gains, the other loses. Mm. Cool. Yeah, this has been a heavily sarcastic introduction to this story. But Bettina Arndt, she's a rape apologist, a pedophilia apologist, and a giant all-round terrible person.
She's bad news. And a fucking liar.
Yes, like a long-term liar, which hopefully she might face criminal charges for. I'm hopeful about that, but
we'll see. So there's kind of two elements to this story. One is that Bettina Arndt, who is a noted piece of shit, won an Order of Australia, and a lot of people were annoyed about that because of all the reasons that you just outlined.
Yep.
The idea being, obviously, we shouldn't be saying that people who have these views are contributing anything of worth to Australian society, or in fact are some of the best citizens that we have. Here's a prize for you.
We might get into a little bit more about the Order of Australia in
we
a minute.
Will.
But
we'll
yeah, let's
in.
Cover the Bettina
We're
stuff
still
first.
Technically in the intro section of this segment. Mm-hmm. So hold tight, but we'll get there. the second element of the story is that it came out shortly after she received the award that she'd been in falsely representing herself as a clinical psychologist. Clinical psychiatrist?
No, clinical psychologist.
Clinical psychologist.
So, to be clear, she does have a master's degree in psychology.
From, like, 1974.
Whatever. But she's not a registered psychologist. She's not a therapist. She can't practice psychology. She's definitely not a clinical psychologist, which is, like, requires an additional degree of training after psychology. And in just, like, every single public appearance and fucked article that she's written for far-right journals and shit, it's like, Bettina Arndt is a social commentator and clinical psychologist. And on news shows and stuff, she gets introduced as a clinical psychologist, and she's like, thanks for having me or whatever.
So her defense has been, oh, I never claimed that. Other people said it about me.
Right.
And I don't have the time to correct everybody.
Right. But, like, when that's happened for 30 years, it seems like maybe she's supplying the information that people give, like the biographies or whatever. That seems extraordinarily likely.
It was on the blurb of her first book.
Yeah, wow. That's cooked. I didn't know that one. That's
so,
bad.
Yeah, the way this came out was in an article written by Chris Graham and a writer named Nina Fennell, or Funnel. I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name, but she's an advocate for survivors of sexual assault and a main spokesperson for End Rape on Campus. So, you know, a long-term advocate and has kind of like a long-running feud with Bettina Arndt, because Bettina Arndt basically is going around saying that rape is not a problem, and the way that it's being, you know, like men are being unfairly maligned and that kind of thing. But Nina Fennell and Chris Graham put together this extremely comprehensive piece for New Matilda, basically cataloging all the times that Bettina Arndt has like not corrected people introducing her as a clinical psychologist. Yeah. And there's an amazing like email exchange in it where Chris Graham confronts her about the fact that it says that she's a clinical psychologist on the back of one of her books. And she's like, oh no, that doesn't sound right. It's like, I've got it right here in front of me. So anyway, yeah, she's an awful person and is completely full of shit. Which brings us to
Shitpost of the Week.
Yeah, so this is a first-time winner, Lou Olson, who has been a participant in the group for some time, but I'm pretty sure this is the first Shitpost of the Week. So this is a packet of Arndt's full of fruit biscuits, except she's edited it so it says Arndt's full o' shit. Instead of full fruit. Yeah, it's pretty excellent.
It's good. I like it.
There was
it's
a bunch good. Of good Arndt posting and a bunch of bad Arndt posting this week, which I appreciate both equally. But
and
the good
contributed
ones.
Contributed to.
I did. Yeah.
Can I say the other thing I love about this shit post?
Please.
Is how shit it is.
Right.
The absolute crummiest.
Everything's like, the wrong color,
clearly
the font.
Done on phone
in
5 minutes. And that's.
That's what we want.
I love it. Yeah, that's what we like.
We also have a runner-up shitpost of the week for a near miss from Steph Westwood, who won our last shitpost of the week from 2 weeks ago, which is, I don't know what the format of it is, what the name this meme format is, but like we have it at home, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's, Mum, can I get clinical psychology? Mum, we have clinical psychology at home. Clinical psychology at home.
Bettina Arndt.
It's good shit. So thanks, Lou. Congratulations. Thanks, Steph. Keep on keeping on with your quality memes.
Yeah. So, Noon, do you want to talk just quickly about what the Order of Australia is and what it means and why people are kind of up in arms about this?
Yeah. So it's a chivalric order, which...
An order for chivalry.
Yeah. So
very modern.
Chivalric orders have existed for like thousands of years, including like the Knights Templar and the Red Cross and a bunch of other stuff that like in the modern era are either like historical remnants or have kind of evolved with the times and become like not-for-profits or whatever. And there's like fucking thousands of them. And just for example, the Royal Family of England are all like Knights of the Order of the Garter. But anyway, the Order of Australia was implemented in 1975, thanks, yeah. On the advice of Malcolm Fraser, I'm pretty sure, because Australia was like, we want knights and shit.
Up until then, they'd just been doing it through Britain.
Right, is that right? The people were getting OBEs and stuff?
Yeah.
Right, okay, interesting. Yeah, there were three levels. The member of the Order of Australia, which is like after someone's name, that's an AM. An officer of the Order of Australia, which is AO, and a companion of the Order of Australia, which is AC.
Mm. And Bettina Arndt was given member.
Yeah, which is the lowest level of that.
And actually, there's four levels, and the lowest level is medal.
Okay, so the medal isn't actually...
a level?
It's not a level. It's a sort of like... a bonus award. You don't have to be a member of the Order of Australia to get a Medal of the Order of Australia.
Is that how the other ones work? You get one and then you move up?
No. So you can just like hop in at any level, right? Depending on
how rich
good
you
are. Yeah, exactly. How rich you are. Yeah. There's a really good quote that I wanted to put in. This is from an article in The Conversation by Nicholas Gruen called The Wrong People Are Being Selected for the Order of Australia. And like, there's a whole bunch of good shit in it. But this is quote, sadly, as research from my firm, Lateral Economics, reveals, many will get the Order of Australia for little more than doing their job. And the higher the job status, the higher the award. Governors General, High Court Justices and Vice Chancellors of major universities would hope for the highest companion of the order. Professors, public service department heads and senior business people should hope for the next one down, an officer of the order. School principals would generally slot in next for the members of the order. If you're lucky or you've done your job extraordinarily well, you'll be promoted one rank, but that's pretty much it. And so this is a really good point, I think, which is that the Order of Australia, like, to be given one of the high gongs, you already have to be, like, extremely wealthy, important, powerful person
yeah.
in order to be doing the kind of shit that the selection committee decides is worth it.
Yeah, and important point, all of that work is paid. Like, these people...
Totally.
Nicholas Groom points out, these people are getting an award for literally doing their job.
And to be clear, there is no, like, cash prize or perks or whatever with being a member of the Order of Australia, except that you, like, get a bunch of doors open because you've got some letters after your name. And, like, presumably you can get
a shiny little
medal. Another cushy job, right?
And they've got fucking different ones for men and women. Different
yeah,
medals.
Yeah.
So okay. I don't know what they give non-binary people or if a non-binary person has ever won an Order of Australia.
I don't think anyone who's out ever has. Yeah. Anyway, so the year after it was brought in, so in 1976, Malcolm Fraser added another level, which is a top level, which is the Knight or the Dame of the Order of Australia, which are the initials are AK or AD. And Hawke got rid of that extra level in 1986. And then, famously, Tony Abbott brought it back in 2014 when he gave Prince Philip...
Prince Phil. That champion of the Australian people.
Yeah, fucking right.
We've been waiting for an opportunity to finally reward him for his service to this great nation.
I feel like a lot of people don't acknowledge Prince Philip.
And the work he does for true blue, hard, yakka, dinky, die Aussies like us.
I can never remember, literally all of the men in the royal family get mixed together, except Prince Andrew. One of them has, like, world-famous compost heaps, and I really fucking admire that, but everything else they do can fuck right off. And, of course, Turnbull cancelled the knight level the next year, so good on you, Trump.
That's some real fucking petty shit.
Yeah, totally.
You gotta respect it.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so the people who get the gongs are, like, many and varied. Famously, Rosie Batty got it in, I think it was 2016, and, like, I think you and I probably agree that she's maybe the sort of person that might deserve to be recognized for their contribution to the country. My old psychiatrist got an Order of Australia.
Oh, fucking way to brag.
Yeah, well, he was fine. I can't afford to see him anymore, so there you go. And, like...
I'm glad I grabbed you down into the dump. I'm sorry. I don't know why I did that.
And, yeah, so, I mean, there's all sorts of other people. Cardiac surgeons, public servants, astronomers, judges, like, a bunch of random jobs. And
conductors. Like music conductors.
Something that I think is really fascinating is that the selection process is not only secret, it's also not subject to Freedom of Information requests.
Mm.
So there's literally no recourse for a member of the public to be like, why the fuck did rape apologist and pedophile supporter Bettina Arndt get this gong? There's no way for us to get any kind of accountability or information about the process that led to her being awarded that.
No. I mean, they're community nominated, and they're like chosen by a council, and then they're awarded by the Governor General. But no, we can't know what the inner machinations of that process were. But you can look at what the public conversation around the awards has been over the last few years, and there's been conversation about how a lot of it was for paid work. There wasn't like categories where people who are doing really good work in volunteer and not-for-profit spaces who weren't getting paid could win awards. So there's been conversation around that, but also that these awards obviously, like any colonial institution, skew massively male.
Yep.
And
white.
Yes. Massively so.
And wealthy. Yeah.
And super wealthy. So in a really kind of backwards and fucked up way, I think that this award to Bettina Arndt, which was specifically given for her contribution to gender equality, that was what it
totally.
Was given for.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the award's way of trying to be like, no, we give it to women for gender stuff. Like, but if they've picked the most reactionary, backwards,
right.
Destructive, horrible anti-feminist that they could find. It's truly dark.
You had a nice hot take about this whole thing, which was kind of like the reason for explaining the order in slightly more detail.
Like, yeah, well, the fact that there are... Yeah, that they're a colonial institution that obviously, like, that literally is something that we just copied from Britain. But I think that Bettina Arndt is actually like a perfect recipient of these rewards. They like are supposed to represent what the Australian state regards as the greatest possible contributions to society that citizens can make. Of course, they're going to give it to somebody who goes around saying that sexual assault isn't a problem, that young girls bring pedophiles onto them by behaving provocatively to their school teachers or whatever. That's an actual thing that she said. About an actual convicted pedophile. She's an extremely odious person. And so
it's an extremely odious medal that she won.
She's the perfect recipient for it.
Together very well. Yeah.
And so people kind of talking about, oh, she's got to be stripped of her award or whatever. Like, these are awards given out by completely morally bankrupt and frankly, like, evil
institutions and people
that have, like, you know, that are part of the long proud history of oppression and genocide that this country was built on. Why try to sanitize that? Of course they're going to give it to these kind of people. And look, I'll say a couple of things here. Some of the awards have gone to people who really deserve them, like Rosie Batty, and Rosie Batty is one of the people who's called for Bettina Arndt to be stripped of her award. And I don't want to say that it's like an illegitimate position or whatever. Totally. And I don't want to denigrate the achievements of people who've been awarded this stuff for good work.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like...
Why would we expect this medal to, like...
Why expect anything different from our institutions at this stage? Like, I think it's clear that if you want real change, that we need to dismantle them. So Bettina Arndt has kind of pushed back on this after the Australian Psychological Society released a statement for the head of the Australian Psychological Society released a statement basically being like, it's illegal to...
pretend you're a psychologist.
And to allow people to say that you're a clinical psychologist when you're not. And now Bettina Arndt has been like, I hate psychology. I want nothing to do with it. I think it's awful.
It tells people that rape is real. She literally said that, like, that's not a direct quote, but it's... Pretty close. Psychology tells women that rape happens.
Yeah, basically she thinks that psychology is skewed against men. So dumb. We didn't... Go on.
I was going to say, and she's also like, I wouldn't even want to be a member of the APS. I'm glad that they don't like me or whatever.
So disingenuous, what a loser. Her entire career, like... At this stage, she's just a talking head. She's a commentator who pops up on Sky News and the commercial networks to, you know, push these completely backwards ideas of what gender equality looks like. And, you know, I mean, it's based on this super fucked and sexist conception of gender equality based on the idea that there are only men and women and that they exist in constant opposition to each other and that feminists must by definition be anti-men, and so we need to push back on that by being anti-woman. That's the only way we can level the playing field. Like, it's just such a dumb approach, and we know that, like, many feminists do work on issues that affect men.
Totally.
If we're talking about correcting or going some way to trying to improve the way that people understand and relate to gender, like, that's work that improves everybody's lives, not just women. So I don't think any of our listeners need to
be convinced on this point. But
you know, she is a symptom of a much broader kind of sickness in the way that we think about gender, and it's a sign of how far we have to go that not only the kind of the media, but also the institutions that are in charge of this country believe that what she is doing is important and valuable work. I mean, aside from the fact that she's a fucking fraud, she's dangerous. Was that worked up enough?
That was excellent. Thank you.
I'm not sure that I got the point I wanted to, but anyway, we've talked long enough. Before we get out of here, we have a couple of new reviews from very kind people that we want to get into. Noon, do you want to read this one that was left on Apple Podcasts?
Yes. So this one is from Viavaten. I don't know who that person is, but thank you for your support and listening to us. It's titled Thoughtful, Smart, and Well-Researched. 5 stars. Here's one thing I really like about this podcast. Hosts Zach and Noon have a great knack for explaining things. They're clear and concise and never condescending. I really appreciate it. Smiley face. Thanks. That's really nice. Smiley face back at you. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And we got one from Julie Martin on Facebook on our page, who says, AS gives overview of current topics without the crap.
That might be a little generous, but we appreciate it.
I think that we serve up copious amounts of crap, but in a way that people enjoy.
It's true. Delicately flavored. You want the, you know, microgreens.
Yeah, you want that good kind of crap. Mm. But thank you, Julia Martin, for that very kind review. If you, listener, enjoy what we do and want to support us, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else that you listen to podcasts where you can leave a review.
And if you have left a review and we haven't read it out on the show yet, we almost certainly haven't seen it because it's on an app that we don't check or that we don't know that you do reviews on. So just message us and be like, hey, why haven't you read our review yet? So, yeah.
Yeah, please do. Send us in a snippet of you ranting about politics or memes or something, and we'll play it on the show.
I think that's us.
Patreon.
Oh, yeah. We have a Patreon. You can sign up if you like the show for $1 a month. You get a bonus episode each month.
The last one was really good.
Yeah, we've got a lot of really good feedback about
If I say so myself.
Yeah. we went through my apocalypse prep bug out bag. And I actually got really good feedback on the Discord. We have a Discord for patrons, so you can get some extra, like, Ozpol SnackPod community chats and things. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Catherine, new supporter on Patreon, who...
basically turn the whole Discord into a prepping thread.
Yeah, so thank you very much for that. I got a lot of useful information. I've now added some twine and muesli bars to my pack.
That's just smart. That's an extra, like, 40 minutes of life for once the apocalypse hits. Yes, also, so yeah, if you want to support us financially, Patreon is the place to do that, and we really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
We've got big plans for the future, and we may need a little help getting there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, please sign up and you get a little bit of extra content. Also, if you are not part of the Ozpol Shitposting Facebook group, which I swear to God is mostly a nice place, please come and join. You can like our page on Facebook, Ozpol SnackPod. You can follow us on Twitter at Ozpol SnackPod. And I think that's probably about it.
Yep.
There was one last thing that I wanted to mention.
Mm-hmm.
Noon, I really enjoyed doing this podcast with you. It's been lovely. Thank you for spending the time. I really value you as a friend and also a podcasting friend. Podcasting friend. Podcasting partner is where I was going with that.
Thanks. Yeah. Me too, but you. Yeah. Zach touched my knee tenderly in the middle of that last comment. Yeah.
I intended for it to be nice. It was opposed to creepy, but you know, sometimes you've got to ride that line, I guess. Keep on snacking in the free world.
Crunch, crunch. Cut the tape.